Hours on Business. Actually, a new client of mine in the biosphere has come on board. But anyway, he's an automotive repair place, Robinwood Automotive. Great people to work with. But I was down there on Thursday and Friday. And particularly on Friday, very nice day down in St. Louis. And it's amazing the difference between, you know, it's, what is it, 330 miles as the crow flies approximately. So it's probably, you got about 250 to the south and maybe another 80. You go to a little bit of east of Des Moines. Yeah, so it's not that far. But my heavens, the temperature difference in St. Louis. And it was a beautiful day yesterday in St. Louis. And I'm thinking, and I really want to, you know, come back right now. Maybe there's something else I could do down here. Maybe there's a Cardinals game I can catch. Yeah, maybe not. So anyway, but y'all, just this crazy weather. Oh, my heavens. And my brethren up to the north and west at Fort Dodge, a city I used to live in, oh, my gosh, they're just getting nailed in Carroll. Now, I'm thinking the snow. This sounds like a Stephen King novel when I think about it. I did radio in Carroll. Kind of started there, and then I did radio in Fort Dodge, and yeah, that's kind of where the snow, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Now that I think about it, man, I need to just keep going. I gotta hit the Virgin Islands. I gotta just keep moving south and get probably end up in Antarctica doing radio, actually. Thank you so much for tuning in this morning at 8:02. Coming up on the radio program, Linda Harmeyer. She is a longtime social worker in the Des Moines area, and she's going to talk about, you know, we don't think about customer service, at least off the top of our head, and social work as necessarily being synonymous. But do social workers get training in, you know, customer service is probably maybe the wrong term for it. We'll see if Linda can throw out a term that is a little more appropriate for her field. Also, Sonia Lubomirsky, professor of psychology at the University of California at Riverside, author of The How of Happiness, is going to join us on the radio program. Very interesting book about how the process of how do we become happy? Is there a process for happiness? Are we sort of born that way? Does it sort of happen? Is it genetic? Is it our environment? Can we make a choice to be happy or not happy? What influences that? Are there dangers in pursuing the idea of being happy? Sonia's spent a lifetime researching it. And she's going to share some of her thoughts with us. Also, reader responses to secret shopper reviews are in the mailbag segment coming up on the program. And also going to talk about the latest shopping news. There's a ton of it that's hit just this week about surgical shopping, for example. There's a piece in the Monday morning, the one registered was an AP story about our propensity just to go in, buy stuff, and leave. We'll get to that also. Post office, more bad news, doggone it, this morning, in this morning's paper about them. And also housing. Housing sales in the month of October, yeah, not so good in the Des Moines area. Down quite a bit. We'll talk more about that. Your weather forecast, temperature is also down a bit, as is the rain is falling down, although it's tapered off. Looks like we're going to be pretty much dry for the rest of the day, although there's still a 20% chance of rain before noon, and then at noon 01, it all stops, so then it just turns cloudy. Very nice. 39 is all we can scrounge up for a high, and then gusty winds up to 30 miles an hour. The winter is right there. It may not be around the corner, but I can see it like coming down the street. It's like a parade. It's like a really bad parade float coming. We can see it. Tonight, breezy, continuing 37. So listen, I'm no genius, but I'm looking at these numbers, high of 39 and low of 37. That sounds like maybe no more than a 2-degree difference in those two things, which is never good. Unless you're living in the Bahamas, then it's like 90 in the day and it's 90 at night. And anyway, winds gusting tonight up to 25 mile an hour. Then partly sunny, a bit warmer Sunday. Nice recovery as we do salvage the weekend for 45 for a high temperature. Back to work Monday, sunny and 50. Right now, we mentioned 37. Indeed, it is 37. Well, Frederick Buechner, the great American author, Presbyterian minister, said, quote, "Compassion is sometimes the fatal capacity for feeling what it is like to live inside somebody else's skin. It is the knowledge that there can never really be any peace and joy for me until there is peace and joy finally for you too," unquote. And there's almost a level. Yeah, and he sort of refers to it. There's almost a level of codependence in there. If you remember the movie E.T., who couldn't? Saw it 1,000 times, cried like a baby at the end. There goes E.T. up in the spaceship. He's leaving. Oh, man, come on back, E.T. You'll be all right. We promise, man. We'll take care of you. We got better health care for you. Yeah, we'll say, listen, we got a stimulus bill now. Come on back. We'll take care of you. I'm telling you. Yeah, there he goes. So there's this sensibility that when you feel pain, I feel pain. I'm plugged into that, and I don't want you to feel pain because when you feel it, that means I got to feel it. So I'm going to do something, everything I can so you don't feel pain. In fact, I may want to do more to ease your pain than my own pain, which, yeah, I kind of deal with. I know what that feels like. But your pain is the unknown to me. Yeah, there's this whole psychology of codependency. So there's kind of a negative sense about that. Yet it is our very compassion that makes us want to reach out and help others. We don't want to feel bad. Let's help them not feel bad. Another quote. This is a quote, "The majority of people who are in social work lost their compassion a long time ago. If someone at DHS smiled and said, hi, I'd blank my pants," unquote. That's from a Polk County DHS employee who asked to remain anonymous. And, you know, sure, she could have said, I'd pull up my pants. Yeah, that's possible, but, you know, maybe not. The idea of a social safety net was first proposed by President Harding back in 1923. And he wasn't terribly healthy anyway, so he thought, you know what? Maybe if I get this going, I could take, because I don't know, this president thing is not paying a lot of money, you know, and so maybe, but and Congress got right on it. 36 years later, the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare was born. The Department of Ed went on its own little merry way. But in 1979, and then we now call it the Department of Health and Human Services. And we typically call it a Department of Human Services, or DHS, because we're in a hurry. We like to shorten things. So DHS is how we refer to it. Nationally, across the board, DHS has a staff kind of small, 67,000 employees. It's not terribly large. Out of a total of 2 million government workers. You know, that's almost exactly the size of the workforce that works for Walmart. Very interesting. Yeah, DHS budget is a puny $78 billion. By comparison, Department of Defense is $687 billion. And believe it or not, DHS is second, budgetarily speaking. Not employee speaking, but budgetarily speaking. Although, here's the fly in the old ointment. DHS also handles Medicare and Medicaid payments, which are what we call mandatory spending. This means that, you know, if you're a politician and you go to mess with that thing, you mandatorily get your booty kicked. So that adds another $750 billion to the DHS budget, which then makes the DHS budget about half of the $1.3 trillion U.S. budget deficit, or slightly less than what Donald Trump's annual toupee budget is. Yes, that sounded funnier this morning than it is now. If you want extremely interesting numbers, if you go to www.debtclock.org, www.debtclock.org. Fascinating site. It just has a constant ticker of our national debt, how much each of us is in debt. You know that you and I owe $44,000. Yeah, I bet you didn't know that. Yeah, I bet you haven't seen that bill. Yeah, yeah. Every man, woman, and child. Yeah, that's about what our debt is spread out across. That's part of our $13 trillion U.S. national debt. But anyway, I digress. The DHS handles a lot of stuff. Health and social science research, preventing disease, food and drug safety, health information technology, financial assistance and services for low-income families. That's the one that is our focus this morning. I randomly select businesses and categories to secret shop. And then I go secret shop them, just on my own. I do it. It's part of my blog, part of my program, part of my dealio do called www.theunsecretshopper.com. So I go do that. And then I report about it. I write about it. And every Thursday, those reports turn up. You can read secret shopper reviews of, tons of stores. Target, Walmart, Iowa State Bank, Come and Go, Casey's. Lots of them on there. I think there's over 50 or 60 of them and counting. But I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to see if I went into the DHS matrix posing as someone who had lost his job and who needed food assistance? It used to be known as food stamps. Sort of there was a stigma attached to that. They changed it. All right, very good. Still the same thing. It's just help. It's what our tax money and paying stuff goes into, this pot, this kitty thing. And then we say, all right, part of this percentage is going to help people who are in a tough place. And, of course, a lot of people who get into that place never thought they'd be in that place. I remember when my mother told me, I never forget this time, she said, we have to go on welfare. And this was at a tough time in her job cycle and some things were going on. And I thought, oh my gosh, that sounds terrible. Am I going to get to eat? You know, I was a kid. I just want to know if my Cocoa Puffs are going to be there in the morning. And sure enough, they were, of course. We got through it. And even as later on in life, I remember going on food stamps. Oh my gosh, it's humiliating. It's embarrassing. It's just soul crushing. The fact that I can't take care of myself. I'm in that place. And we think we'll never be there. And then, yeah, circumstances change. And there we are. We are compassionate people. We are compassionate people. Arthur Steinbeck, the Baptist minister, said the value of compassion cannot be overemphasized. Anyone can criticize. It takes a true believer to be compassionate. No greater burden can be borne by an individual than to know no one cares or understands. Yeah, we feel your pain, G. We're a very empathetic, compassionate society, very much. And all of us are as human beings. We can tap into that. And so the idea was go through DHS and see what happens. Just from and there are so many different organizations within DHS I could have went through, but I really chose food assistance. That was my focus. All right. So I go in, and the private sector handles a lot of that. There are food pantries and shelters and stuff and churches and all that. But, of course, there is a safety net, too, the government provides, and that is the food assistance. But you have to apply to get food assistance or medical assistance or whatever it is. I decided early on I was not going to fill out an application to do that. And the reason was is because I felt that I would be committing fraud. I had some concerns about. First of all, if I went in and I filled out the form accurately, they'd kind of laugh at it. They'd say, okay, why are you here, you freak? And if I lie, then that's fraud. And then I end up in a place where I'm going to need assistance, and it's called 1-800-GET-A-LAWYER. So, yeah, I didn't want to go down that road. So I decided I was going to try to get in to see someone without having filled out an application. And that provided a very interesting challenge. The DHS has two main offices, 2309 Euclid, beautiful new digs there, and then also 1900 Carpenter, which is where folks go for family medical, family investment program, known as FIP, and the food assistance office. They also known as income maintenance services is how they position that. And the beautiful facility on Euclid is known as Polk County River Place, which is very nice anyway. So I went to that place first. And I also called in, and I got to tell you that there's some real challenges with calling into the DHS, right? And you know, nothing against any, no one's doing anything wrong. But for example, one time, automated answer, I call in, and then I was on hold for 13 minutes, and then a voice said, Iowa Department of Human Services, and they seemed really bored and angry and not very happy. And so if you're on hold, sure, the last thing you want to hear, because you're not terribly happy, is hear someone else who is not happy. Yeah, it's a kind of a clash. Whether it's DHS, retail, any place, we probably deserve a little better than that. We'd like that different. And then another time through, and I think I called through a total of 6 or 7 times. Another time through, phone rang twice. Somebody picked it up. Iowa Department of Human Services. This is Bridget. And Bridget, yeah, she kind of appears in this review a couple times and not in the best light. Over the phone, again, sounds sort of angry, short-tempered, depending on the time of day, might call, but pretty consistently, not in her happy place. And then a couple other times, I was on hold 17 minutes once through the automated system. Then I got a human being. Again, that person didn't sound very happy. So there's a problem with that, I would say, with the phones there. Calling into the location at 1900 Carpenter, the phone rang. I tried to call 9 different times, and it was busy throughout a two-hour period each and every time. And then on the 10th call, the phone rang 87 times. And if I sat here and had a sound effect of a phone and I just let that thing ring 87 times, yeah, maybe I've created a new musical format, but I'm guessing most of you would probably tune out. But no, your erstwhile unsecret shopper stayed with it. I don't even know what erstwhile means. I hope it's not bad. But anyway, that's what I feel like I was. Another time it rang 96 times, and someone finally answered. And when they answered, they said, Human Services, and they weren't happy. And I could tell that they were in a probably very, very bad place. But then, more often than not, the most beautiful, amazing sound I heard throughout this whole time came from Rhonda, working at the 1900 Carpenter location. She answered the phone, Department of Human Services, this is Rhonda, can I help you? Very pleasant, very kind. And I think I got her two other times, and again, spot on every single time. Very pleasant. And this is over a period of 2 weeks that I called into the 1900 Carpenter location. Very nice. So hats off to her. Did a super job. And then in person, when I went to the Euclid office, I got in there, and there was a woman at the counter, and I walked up to her at the main DHS office, and she said, she turned to me from the computer, looked up, "Can I help you?" And again, you know, I train in retail all the time that they build counters and they hire people to help, and we come in needing help, that the last thing we ever want to ask is, "Can I help you?" Yeah, it's patently obvious that we're there for help. That there's a different way to ask, and that's an open-ended, "What can I help you with?" It just feels friendlier. It feels more reasonable. And I don't know why more companies don't train on this element, but consistently, whether it's at the DHS or Sam's Club or McDonald's, "Can I help you?" "No, I'll just go somewhere else." So any event, that person turned out to be Bridget. And as I explained to her, I said, "Listen, I lost my job. I'm in a bad place. I need assistance. I need to talk to somebody about getting food assistance." And as I'm telling her the story, now she's sitting behind the desk. Literally, she begins to lean down and put her head on the side of her hand, which her elbow is leaning on the table now. And she's leaning there, and her head starts to tilt a little bit. And she's looking at me like I'm reading out of the Cambridge phone book. The most bored, disconnected, "I could care less about what you're telling me look." It was stunning. Stunning. Again, this is someone who is in that position to help people who need help. We talked about compassion in the quotes. I suspect that Bridget has seen a lot of people come through the door. I don't know how long she's worked for the DHS. But there is a consistency, and I'm going to read some reader mailbag stuff coming up later on the program, and you're going to hear Bridget's name mentioned again by someone who also went through, for real, the DHS matrix. So, Bridget, yeah, more compassion, I think, would be, I'd have a chat with you, doggone it. Let's lead with our happy place. These are people in tough spots. But it's tough. Over the years, you grow this sort of veneer and old, like, it's, you don't feel up like you did at the beginning. At the Family Medical FIP and Food Assistance Center on Carpenter, it was quite a bit different. Now, where they're still asking, "Can I help you?" at the counter, all right, and it's sort of glassed off, so it looks like an old bank may have been in there at one point. But I got to tell you, when I sat there and I waited and I came in and said I wasn't going to fill out the application, and Rhonda on the phone finally said, "Listen, just fill out your name, address, phone number, somebody, and that'll get you in, but otherwise you can't get in." And so she kind of really led me by the hand through it, what I thought was really awesome. And then the people at the counter were great. They were smiling to each other. They were engaging as people came into that office. It wasn't a terribly long line. I believe it was a Tuesday I was there. But I was really impressed with their interaction. The people even waiting, and again, this is a slow day, I suspect, at that particular office. There were probably about 10 people sitting in chairs, and there was a capacity for 30 that I could see. But my suspicion is that was a pretty slow day, and so it may not have been the best barometer. But you know what? I got to tell you, those people seem pretty happy. I think they could teach some people in retail quite a bit. Now, there were some exceptions. Connie, as I was actually leaving after I'd been engaged by a woman, I'll tell you about that in a minute. Connie, I decided to challenge it one more time. So before I left the building completely, I went back up to that window, and a woman finally looked up from her computer very slowly, and then very slowly got up, and very slowly, and she may have an injury or something, I understand, or, you know, arthritic or something. And she came over, and she stood there and stopped and said nothing. And waited for me to say something. So that wasn't, yeah, there was that, and that was Connie, doggone it. Yes, and that's no way, we like to see happy people there at the counter. But Susan Crayonbull was an absolute stud muffin. She actually is the one who saw me, and I went back and interacted with her and told her my story, and she could tell I was hesitant about the application stuff, and so she did one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen. She just started asking me questions. And those questions were the ones that needed to be answered on the application, taking me through it very slowly, methodically, compassionately. You could tell she was plugged in. She felt empathy. Now, she's been with the DHS, I believe, 3 years, as I recall. I let the cat out of the bag with her at some point. I was so thrilled at what she was doing, so happy with how she was handling all that. She has a master's degree in social work, has been with DHS for 3 years. She said, quote, "I hope I don't ever have to be in the situation, but if I do, I'd want someone to treat me with respect," unquote. That goes back to compassion. That goes back to empathy. And what I tell people in retail all the time, trainees, I say, listen, the most important word we can ever learn and hold clear, dear to our hearts is empathy. It alone will help us plug in to how other people feel. And if we can feel that feeling, we will help more people. We will make more money when we make more of an impact in our lives than with any other thing, any other headline. Empathy. And she had it. And she was just fantastic. Susan, can't thank you enough for making it. And Rhonda. And by the way, Rhonda, congratulations, got promoted on that Friday after the Thursday review came out last week of the DHS. Susan said that was Rhonda's last day in sort of the clerical position, that she was being promoted up into what Susan does as working with the income maintenance folks. Oh, my gosh. Congratulations, Rhonda. That's what I'm talking about. Super job. It's so good to hear. She's very, very deserving. And some fine folks working in DHS. Quite a pleasant surprise at how good it was. So if you're in a down-and-out place, do not hesitate. Those people will treat you right. Go through the matrix at DHS, and you can read all about it at www.theunsecretshopper.com. Speaking of social work, Linda Harmeyer has been a longtime social worker. She's going to join us next, talk to us about customer service training within the social work field. That is next to the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show at 1350 KRNT. Is there a smile on your puss and a song in your heart this morning? I certainly hope there is at the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show, 1350 KRNT. Nothing to frown about. And if there is, you let the frown go for a while, and you say, yeah, you know, it's time for the smile thing again. Isn't that ironic? It takes more muscles to frown than it does smile, yet frown is sort of where we keep our face. I guess we just develop those muscles. We exercise them over time. But listen, nothing to frown about on the weather end. The rain is through, although they're still getting some snow up to the northwest. If you're traveling up there, yeah, over 10 inches of snow in some spots around the Carroll area. My goodness sakes. We'll see 39 for the high today. That's not much of a high, really. 37 for the overnight. And back at the 45 with sunshine. Something to smile about on your Sunday. Right now we are at 39 degrees at 8:25. Coming up, reader mailbag. We'll take a look at some reader responses to Secret Shopper reviews from the past. Very interesting dialogue. Right now, Linda Harmeyer is a longtime social worker in the Des Moines area and has seen a lot, done a lot, too, for those in need. She joins us this morning, and we did this remotely, not in studio. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
Hey, Linda, how did you get involved in the field of social work? When you were a kid, were you, I mean, I know I've been with social workers around them. Were you the kind of kid that brought home every, like, wounded dog? Were you, like, an uber-empathetic person growing up? Sort of, were you raised that way? Tell me how that all sort of started.
Well, I grew up in a family of 12 children. My parents had 12 kids. We grew up on a farm, very hard-working family, and one of my older siblings, my sister, was in the social work field, and she did bring some clients home with her over the holidays because they didn't have family that would actually come visit them. And so she was doing things like that, and that was my example, and that's kind of where it all started from, was that my sister was a good example for me, and I really felt like that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to help people. I was very empathetic, and I really thought that was the role that I wanted to do in life.
And, you know, I can't imagine having 12, being raised in a family with 12, yeah, you're going to learn empathy real fast, I would imagine.
Actually, yes. I mean, you learn to deal with a lot of different situations. And so, you know, growing up in that environment was great. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. And I really think that gave me the background for what I wanted to do.
And so when you decide to go into social work, where did you go to school at?
I ended up getting my degree through Iowa State University, and I have a degree in psychology and a minor in sociology, and then I've been working on my master's degree in social work from the University of Iowa.
Well, now I have to ask you, and this is sort of off the beaten track, when Iowa State lost, the football team lost last weekend, as a social worker, did you find yourself having to console any Iowa State fans?
Myself, nope, I was actually there. My husband actually is a Nebraska fan. So is my son. We're a divided family. My daughter and I are Iowa State fans, and they're Nebraska fans. It was horrible.
That must have taken every ounce of your social worker's skill to be able to unwind all of that. My gosh.
It was. I mean, I'm telling you, I had to use a lot of inner strength to control myself and just say, well, it's just a game.
That's right. Stay in your role. Stay in your R. That's right. That's right.
Exactly.
You know, I think that I can't imagine a tougher career. I mean, I look at social work as people being on the front lines, much like, and I don't mean to compare it, but to policemen, fire people, people in the EMS field, people, doctors. I mean, you really are on the front lines of the emotional and the financial ills and the struggles that we all face as a society. How has that been over the past how many years that you've been working in it?
It's a frontline kind of position. I mean, you're dealing with case management with actual human beings, and it can be very stressful because you are, you know, inundated with the emotions of all these people that are going through tough times. And so, you know, you do have to use a lot of empathy and be very caring in that role. And that's, like I said, one of the reasons why I wanted to get into it, because I really could, you know, feel for these people. You know, basically you're trying to help them through tough times, and that's what you're trying to do for them.
What is it in my capacity as a customer service trainer? I work on the retail end, and yet from my experience at DHS, and it seemed like there were some similarities in certain elements that were somewhat surprising to me. For example, the interaction that I looked for when I was coming up to the counter at DHS, for example, how the person smiled at me, or their body language, really the same sorts of things that I look for in retail. How much of that sort of, for lack of a better term, customer service training, how much of that goes on throughout your education, your training as a social worker?
When you're in school, I mean, yes, you're definitely taking classes that are about that. You're taking human behavior classes and how people interact, counseling classes. You often do internships or externships to gain some of that experience and to see whether or not this is a role that you can handle. I mean, social work is a very difficult field because of that. You're dealing with people constantly and dealing with people's problems on an ongoing basis. So there's a lot of stress with that. And, you know, believe me, I told my family, and I tell my sister this all the time, the one who was my example for going into social work, is that you're not in social work for the money or the glory. It's a very entry-level position. I remember getting out of school at Iowa State, and I'm getting my first social work position as a case manager, making, you know, $14,000 a year, and my friend who graduated in business was starting out at principal, making $26,000 a year. You know, so you're not in it for the money. You're in it because you want to be there. You want to help other people. And so you do have a lot of training in school regarding that. And, you know, like I said, the internships, externships, to get a feel for that. And then you have ongoing training with any, you know, company or field that you're in, you know, whatever place that you're placed, whether that be, you know, juvenile detention or DHS or, you know, some private agency that's providing these services.
Linda, how do you keep from... And I would say this in any field where someone works with hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are in desperate places at times. How do you maintain a sense of empathy when without building up that sort of caustic, I've been there, done that, I've heard the same stuff, I've been through down this road with people 1,000 times. How do you treat every person as if they're fresh and new and this is the first time you've ever heard of these problems? How do you do that?
Well, basically, you have to see them as an individual. I mean, I think if you are able to put yourself in their shoes and just say, hey, you know, I'm not in that position. You know, things in my life are pretty good. You know, taking a look at, you know, it could be worse for me. I need to understand that these people need my help. I'm trying to give them the tools. Obviously, it's their choice whether or not they make, you know, different choices or use the tools that you give them to get themselves to a better life. I mean, as I tell all my clients, you know, this is a stepping stone. You know, I can't do the work for you, but I'm going to give you some tools. I'm going to give you some information, and it's your choice whether or not you use it, and hopefully, you know, things are going to be different for you. You know, you can use that to change your circumstances, and things are going to get better, you know, day by day. You just got to keep working at it.
My guest this morning is Linda Harmeyer. She's a longtime social worker with us on 1350 KRNT. And what should people who, and especially in this economy, Linda, we've got people going into needing the social network or needing the social safety net probably for the first time ever. I'm assuming a lot of people are coming in for the first time. But whether they're a first-time person or someone who's been through it a long time, what should the expectations of a person in need be as far as how they're treated by someone who's working, for example, at DHS or any organization that's where social workers are sort of at the foundation of it?
Well, you know, basically they need to make that first phone call, make that first step to be asking for the help. And, you know, working with that case manager as best they can, you know, case management levels are really high right now because there are a lot of people asking for help. The dollars available for services for, you know, DHS and other programs are very low. I mean, you know, people's taxes is what have to pay for that. So you're working with minimum resources but high caseloads. And that can cause stressful situations. And, you know, the client's coming in, they just need to ask for help. They need to ask lots of questions, ask if there's other resources out there that they can be tapping into so that they can get their needs met.
Linda, I when I talk to people who are what I would call heroes, of which you are one, you're in a field in which heroism is almost a daily occurrence, and yet unsung heroes, I think, is a more proper term. How do you, or how does someone in your position, release that stress? Are there built-in mechanisms with, for example, DHS or other organizations in which those workers on the front lines can go talk to somebody else, a psychologist, or sort of get rid of that, you know, built-up stuff? Are those mechanisms in place, to your knowledge?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we always have the opportunity to have time with our coworkers to be able to talk about what's going on with our cases and our families and to kind of bounce ideas off of each other about how to handle things. We have our supervisors that we can go to. We have ongoing trainings. You know, we have the Employee Assistance Program, the EAP program, which most agencies have something like that. That if you need to go talk about something going on in your personal life or how work is affecting you personally, you have that opportunity to try and resolve that and find some other coping mechanisms for yourself along the same lines of what we try to give to our clients. Now, here's the tools. Now you have to figure out how you're going to use them to deal with your situation.
Does a DHS or any other social service organization, to your knowledge, do they ever do, for lack of a better term, secret shopping? Do they ever send people through their process clandestinely just for checks and balances purposes to see if people are smiling, engaging on some level, or whatever the process may be? Does that occur, to your knowledge?
Well, I mean, I know that most agencies at some point do some, you know, internal checks and balances. Is it a secret shopper kind of thing where they send somebody through the process? I can't say for sure. I do know that, you know, there's always quality assurance issues where they have to have somebody come in and kind of take a look at how's the case management going. You know, that's just normal process for, I think, any business or agency. But is it a type of secret shopper? Not that I'm aware of.
All right, very good. Well, I tell you what, whether we call it in retail, we call it customer service, and on your side, I know you call it case management, but whatever it is, it's all about being empathetic, that key word, and I train on that hard, and you've said it 100 times in our conversation today, and I tell you what, no one has more empathy than the folks in the front lines doing the hardest work of all, which is what you do every day, and the folks who do what you do. Linda, we can't, all of us cannot thank you enough. You have our utmost gratitude, and I also thank you for joining me this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Linda Harmeyer, longtime social worker, working the front lines. We're doing it with a smile, as so many of folks work for DHS and otherwise are. Thank you so much, Linda. 836 now, the Unsecret Shopper radio show rolls on. We will roll into reader mail, reader responses. You know, the post office wishes it was actually sent via the mail. We'll give you those numbers a little bit later on, and it's not good for the post office. And later on the program, Sonia Lubomirsky, professor of psychology at the University of California at Riverside, author of The How of Happiness, about how to stay happy. All that and so much more. The Unsecret Shopper Radio Show, 1350 KRNT. Heart, 837 now, The Unsecret Shopper Radio Show. With Brittany underneath us, we are... No, stop. That's... Stop. Listen, I didn't even... That's not even... Stop it! Time for some reader email bag stuff. By the way, weather forecast today, cloudy, rain stops, and 39 is all we meant for a high. We're 37 right now. Okay, reader response. You know, this is I don't know how I feel about this song. I had to go back. This was an off hit for Britney Spears back in the day. About the review of the Department of Human Services, this person writes, "Whoa, this brought back some sad memories. It included getting assistance about 3 years back. I was pregnant. My husband and I had recently separated. It was tough and had to go through DHS. I hated going to the Euclid office. I was already depressed, and having another human being with some authority, the clerk that has what you need, treat you like you are unimportant and worthless, simply made things a little harder. I wasn't looked in the eye, would not be responded to in full sentences. Everything you describe with Bridget. Maybe it's the same gal I had to talk back then. I wasn't worthy enough for her to look up at me. It doesn't matter today, but back then it simply made the process a little more painful. Made me feel even worse than my situation was already making me feel. I hope this report is read by DHS and Bridget, too." Thank you for that response. On the story on Virginia Wiggins, the get-and-go manager, car crash survivor, and perpetual smiler wearer, Pam writes, "As always, great story, Johnny. Thanks for caring enough to stop and ask good questions." On the post and encourage people to not vote last Tuesday, November 2nd, reader says, "Thanks, Johnny. I feel much better now about skipping the polls this time around while having to lie to all the customers who kept asking me all day, 'Did you vote yet?'" Didn't have the guts to tell the truth, so just said I was going after work. "However, is it one of my freedoms as American to exercise free will and decide for myself whether or not I would like to exercise my right to vote? I do appreciate that we are allowed to vote in this country, and I do vote more often than not, so who is to tell me that I'm not allowed to sit one out? Well, I should choose to do so. Whew, feel better now that I got that off my chest." On the Secret Shopper review of Walmart, this reader writes, "Walmart combined with customer service is an oxymoron. Unfortunately, I see examples of the same type of lack of focus and interest in customer relations that I experienced at Walmart in most stores where there are A, teenage employees, and B, immigrants whose cultural differences may be an influence." And last, let me share this one with you. This is from Chris. Chris is an employee at Walgreens, and Walgreens, this is one of the Walgreens that I secret shopped and reviewed in a post on October 27th. And Chris writes this, "First of all, I am not a young man. I am a middle-aged woman with a husband who just came through a quadruple bypass only to find out he now has a brain tumor. I also have a daughter who is a senior in high school. I have an 83-year-old mother who is losing her mind and brother who is a quadriplegic and needs help with everything. I work two jobs for a basically minimum wage, yet still show up for work every day, pulling off a smile, even though I really don't feel like it, and trying to help as many people as I can. Who are you to judge me on sincerity? What do you want me to do? Bow to you, kiss your feet, follow you around, and beg you to let me help you? From what I can see, maybe you have too much free time and you should think about helping someone else once in a while instead of criticizing everyone all the time. You just might find that it makes your little corner of this world a better place. By the way, I really don't have time to be sitting here writing this letter to you, although it made me mad when I read the comments you made about me for basically doing my job." And that was written by Chris. And she works at the Southeast 14th Walgreens. And so I read that post and I realized that I had made some mistakes. And I wanted to make them right. And so I, one day last week, drove to that Walgreens and asked for Chris. And it was, I apologized to her and she cried and we shared some tears and laughed a bit too. And so it brings to point this thing, and that all of us have a backstory. All of us have stuff going on in our lives. You know, life is what gets in the way of plans. Of course, the old saying goes, "There's we have tragedy and triumph and all these things going on in our lives, in our world. And it takes a heroic effort to go to work, to be in front of other people who may be customers, who may not always be patient, who may be having their own issues, and who bring that anger and frustration in with them, and it coats how they interact with us as employees. It takes a heroic effort to at least appear happy or on some level engaging or to acknowledge people and do so with a smile. It most certainly does. It most certainly does. Hero is not too strong of a word for the people on the front lines in retail who do it every day and do so very well. It is a reminder for me and all of us to have the utmost patience and compassion as we do our own shopping, and employees too, to have that same level of patience and compassion for customers who may not necessarily be in the best of places. I guess for all of us, maybe a little more compassion is a good thing. And so I will take that to heart, and we'll keep working on it. 8:43 now, the Unsecret Shopper radio show. Coming up, conversation with Sonia Lubomirsky, professor. She's a professor of psychology. She is indeed. And she wrote a book that is called The How of Happiness, talking about being happy. Get some insight into whether happiness is genetic predisposition, or is it environmental, how is it impacted? Some guidelines, and she has spent a lifetime studying the subject. A lot of research with folks asking a lot of questions. You'll hear from her coming up. Plus, some raw numbers about some businesses not doing so well. That would include the post office and local housing. We'll get to that. Plus, something called surgical shopping. Yeah, it's not shopping for a surgeon. You may sound like it is. All that and so much more here at the Unsecret Shopper radio show at 8:43 here at 1350 KRNT. Hello, happy campers.
Hello, world.
This is the Unsecret Shopper radio show at 1350 KRNT. You can read about it, read all about it at theunsecretshopper.com. Also part of my training program called the Biosphere, B-U-Y-O-S-P-H-E-R-E. And I train companies as diverse as Dahl's Foods, Gabus Auto Group, Westside Auto Pros. Work very diligently with very hardworking employees and working on pillars of great customer service. Smile, greet, engage, thank, follow up, and serve chocolate. Yes, all six of them. That chocolate one's going to become much more prevalent here, I think, as we go into the seasons where, yeah, we just want to stuff our face. Right? Who doesn't? Who doesn't want to make themselves happy? That's what it's all about. Sonia Lubomirsky has made a career out of finding out why we are so inclined to want to be so happy, and is there a pathway to it that's a little simpler, a little easier? She joins us this morning. Good morning, Sonia.
Good morning.
Sonia, you are from Russia originally, and I think I speak for folks when I think of Russian people don't appear to be uber-happy people, and yet you write about elements of happiness. It's sort of been the focus of your career. Are people happy? Were you a happy kid growing up in Russia?
I think I was, you know, reasonably happy. But, you know, it's interesting because when I immigrated to the United States, I was around 10 years old. I noticed, you know, the huge difference in happiness between Russians and Americans. I always have thought that that kind of sparked an interest in kind of what happiness is and how people express it and how we can all become happier. But yeah, I'm a pretty happy person.
And so, and you were that way as a kid? I mean, you ran around, you smiled a lot, giggled a lot. That's how family was for you?
I don't know. No, I wouldn't say I giggled a lot. I was a very shy kid.
Interesting. And so you go from that to being a professor. You stand in front of hundreds of students, and you write a book, and you do tours, and you do interviews. How'd you go from being so shy to being so outgoing?
You know, it's a great question, actually. I think I'm one of the examples where of people who can really change. I mean, through years of sort of effort, I really try to be more outgoing, and I really am. I'm not shy anymore.
You just had to force yourself out on the limb, it sounds like, and
that's
get
right.
over
and, you
that.
Know, it's very similar to what happens with happiness, because people who have a kind of born naturally not very happy, they can become happier, as my book, The How of Happiness, shows, but they have to really put effort into it, you know, maybe every day of their life.
And I think that's maybe a bit of a surprise, because I think, well, you know, you're happy, you're either born happy and you're that way, or you're not happy and you're going to be frumpy your whole life. But what you're saying is, no, we can actually teach ourselves to be happier.
That's right. In fact, it's one of the myths of happiness that I talk about in my book is this idea that you either have it or you don't, you know. And the thing is that there's some truth to that, because about 50% of individual differences in happiness are genetically determined. So there's definitely a genetic component to happiness, but there's also a genetic component to cholesterol levels and weight and lots of things that we can change. So it just means that we have to really work hard at it and, you know, use strategies or engage in activities that make us happier.
You were awarded a grant of a substantial amount of money in 2002 from the National Institute of Mental Health to pursue this in depth. Now, how do you get a grant for $1 million to pursue the subject of happiness?
Well, actually, I'm now told that the National Institute of Health doesn't fund research on happiness, but happiness is really relevant to mental health. You know, people, you know, if you take depressed people or anxious people, and you make them have you engage in strategies to make them happier. Their depression and anxiety goes down. Happier people are more productive at work. They're healthier physically. They have better relationships. So I think it's very important to study happiness. And so the NIH, I hope, recognize that.
How do we know? How does a person know if they're legitimately happy?
Well, you know, there's no thermometer for happiness. So what we do is we ask people directly, how happy are you? Basically, you self-report measures. And, you know, I would say 99% of people that we talk to have a very good idea about whether they're happy or not.
My guest this morning is Sonia. I'm going to have you pronounce your last name for me.
Okay, Sonia Lubomirsky. It means love and peace in Russian, Lubomirsky.
Well, no wonder you're so happy. You were granted the name Lubomirsky. Did I pronounce that correct?
That's right.
Well, is happiness, and you asked this very compelling question as I was looking at your site, is happiness actually a good thing?
Yes, it absolutely is a good thing. A couple of my colleagues and I did a meta-analysis, which is a study of many studies. We looked at 225 studies on happiness, and what we found was that once you are happier, once you are a happy person, lots of good things accrue to you. So happier people are more creative, they're better negotiators, they're more likely to get married, they're less likely to get divorced, they have a stronger immune function, they're more generous, and so happiness isn't just something that feels good. It actually has positive, you know, consequences and benefits for both the individual and the society.
Now, Sonia, we're sitting here in the middle of the Midwest in Des Moines, where it's about, it's about 40 degrees, and you're out there in California, where it's probably about 70, and you can hear probably the ocean from where you're at. So we're thinking, all right, maybe it's easier to be happy environmentally in a nice, warm. How much does environment play a role in all of that?
Okay, great question, but I have to tell you, we're undergoing this horrible heat wave right now, so it's way too hot. It's like in the middle of the summer. But having said that, yes, I think the environment certainly matters. It just doesn't matter as much as we think it does because we tend to adapt or get used to, for example, the weather in our kind of the average weather in our lives, or even things like, you know, how much money we make, whether we're married or not, how healthy we are. Of course, when the environment or when our circumstances are really terrible, when we're poor, when we're in an abusive relationship, when we have like a really horrible illness, you know, of course that's going to make us unhappy. But if we're sort of relatively like okay or average, then our environment doesn't affect our happiness as much as we think it does.
Sonia, do we tend to look at the details of our life, just as you pointed out, and lay blame or give them credit for the way we feel, especially if we don't really know, because we just sort of got where we feel and we don't know how we got there?
You know, absolutely. In fact, in my book, The How of Happiness, another myth that I talk about is that, you know, I'll be happy when this and this and this happens. And so the idea is that, you know, people think that what makes them happy are their life circumstances, the situations they face. So like, when I get that job, I'll be happy. When I move to that city that's really nice, I'll be happy. When I have a baby, I'll be happy. And it turns out that actually, and it sort of sounds like a cliche, but happiness is really much more inside of us than outside of us.
If you were starting a company, let's say it was Sonia's Cheeseburgers, all right, uh-huh. You're going to put up your shingle, and you're going to start hiring employees. And since I do customer service training, this is an extremely important question to me. During an interview, what sort of questions would be sort of barometers as to whether or not you're actually getting a happy person?
Okay, well, first I should say that happiness is one of many qualities that you'd want in an employee that enhances their productivity and creativity. So I wouldn't say that it's more important than, say, you know, intelligence or expertise or skills and things like that, or conscientiousness. I would give a bunch of questionnaires maybe to my employees and ask them some questions, and lots of employers do that. But you know what? You don't really need to ask anything. You can tell. You know what? I will bet that, you know, basically in the first 3 minutes of meeting someone, you generally have a pretty good idea whether they're a happy person or not.
When you have a day when you're not happy, I imagine it would be very tough. I mean, you've written a book and you've studied it and everything, and you sort of have this "Hi, I'm happy," you know, face hovering above your head all the time. When you're not in that place, is it really obvious to others who are around you? Are you show that unhappy place easily, or do you tend to think, "All right, now remember, Sonia, you're the happy chick. You got to stay in that place."
Well, first I should say that, you know, happy people experience negative emotions. And negative emotions can be very useful, and they're important. You know, sometimes when you need to be angry about something, or sometimes you need to be anxious or worried. Sometimes you need to be sad and figure out what's wrong. So I'm not the kind of person who really hides my emotions that well. I mean, in certain situations, I certainly will. Like if I'm giving a lecture to my class, you know, I'm gonna hide my emotions. But I you know, I'm sort of expressive. You know, if I'm in a bad mood, I think people know it.
Talk about what's an average, and you have, and how many different. Tell me about the classes you teach at University of California,
sure,
Riverside.
Sure. Well, I teach. Right now, I'm teaching actually a seminar on positive psychology, which is basically the study of what makes life worth living, including how, you know, what is happiness. And so, in fact, we were just talking this week about the question of how money can make you happy, how spending money in ways can make you happy. But I also teach a class on social psychology, sort of introduction to social psychology, sort of my entire field. And I teach a class on professional development and things like that.
Okay, last question this morning. Give us the blueprints, in 60 seconds, if we want to get, I feel like I'm not as happy as I could be. I think I can increase that, but I'm not sure how to get that. What's the blueprint? What's the process?
Well, you know, there's no one blueprint for everyone. In The How of Happiness, I talk about 12 different strategies people can use to become happier. They're all supported by research, which is why there are only 12. And there are things like trying to be more grateful for what you have, doing acts of kindness for others, improving your relationships, physical exercise, meditation, being more forgiving, living more in the present. But what's important is to find what fits your personality and what fits your goals, because these strategies don't fit everyone. And I have actually a diagnostic test that people can take that will help them determine, you know, should I do more gratitude? Should I do more kindness? Should I do more forgiveness? You know, sort of what will be most helpful to the individual, and then you just do it. You know, there's different ways to do it. I talk about it in my book. I actually have an iPhone application called Live Happy. I don't make any money off of it, but that also that has happiness strategies that have been supported by research that you can use. You can do using your phone. You can, you know, ask your friends to help you. You know, using social support is really important. So, but anyway, the point is that you need to find something that fits you, and then exert effort and be motivated and be committed.
One of the most important questions I think we can ever ask ourselves is, how can we be happy? And The How of Happiness attempts to answer that very profound question. Sonia, tell us how to get the book.
No, you can get it anywhere, bookstores, Amazon. Just Google The How of Happiness.
Sonia Lubomirsky is our guest this morning. Sonia, I can't thank you enough for joining us, and stay happy. We need more of that.
Thank you. You too. It's been a pleasure.
Sonia Lubomirsky at the Unsecret Shopper Radio Show, 1350 KRNT. Keep that smile going, Sonia. Coming up, folks are struggling to keep a smile on their face working at the post office and in home sales. Doggone it. Not so good numbers to share with you. Plus, surgical shopping. We're doing more of it, and it may be also affecting retail overall. What is it? Talk about it next. The Unsecret Shopper Radio Show at 1350 KRNT.
How much is that dog?
8:58 now. The Unsecret Shopper Radio Show. Thank you for tuning in this morning. Go to www.theunsecretshopper.com for more reviews, secret shopper reviews, previous radio programs, tips on shopping and smiling and all that good stuff. The pillars of in there, great customer service. October home sales down 30% in Iowa in the register this morning. While they fell neither 30% in the Des Moines area, they're down 40% last month compared to a year ago. Pending sales also down last month, nearly 25%. They're trying to get that to bounce back, but it's tough to smile when you're a real estate agent trying to sell a $500,000 house, and boy, the people just aren't buying. Also, post office losses of $8.5 billion last year. They cut 100,000 jobs, and they're still leaking money like a sieve. At the same time, volumes declining, and post offices been required to begin new service to thousands of new customers. And surgical shopping. We go into a store, we get what we want, and we leave. We're spending less time in stores. We're spending less time online shopping. It means all of us in retail otherwise need to make sure we're smiling and greeting and engaging right there at the point. Because, man, they're going to come in and just leave, and
where
that'll be it.
Live.
Have a great weekend.